You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. And there is no getting around it. If you spend 8 hours or more at work every day, at some point, you gotta eat. Maybe get a sandwich or a salad, but there is always that person who microwaves something incredibly fragrant. Seriously, why? The do's and don'ts of food at work is this month's Ask a Manager topic. And Allison Green, food can seem like kind of a small thing, and yet it creates so much workplace drama. Why do you think that is?
It does. We tend to run into drama and angst at work when we run into each other's humanity. So you see it come up with food. You see it come up with social issues. I think with food, there's so much weirdness around food in society in general. People who are judgy about what you're eating, people who push food on you that you don't want, people who want to comment on everything you bring for lunch and everything you put in your mouth. And then, of course, there's the physical ramifications of what people bring, too, the smells and the sounds of crunching, which can drive people crazy.
Yeah, actually, speaking of smells, we put this out on the internet, and the two chief complaints about food that we got, there were a lot of offenders, but the big ones were microwaved fish and burnt popcorn. Should there be a hard and fast rule against these things?
Those two, the fish and the popcorn in the microwave, are the ones that I hear people complain about the most, too. The third one that I hear a lot about is the smell of microwaved broccoli. Some offices do ban people from heating up fish or popcorn. I think if you're going to do a ban, you're better off keeping it short and sweet. You don't want to get into posting a long, detailed list of what people can and can't prepare, because the more complicated you make it, the more drama it's likely to cause, and the more you risk causing problems for people who maybe are on a restricted diet and already choosing from a pretty small list of things they can bring for lunch. But most people, I think, can get on board with a ban on microwaving one or two of the most notoriously smelly foods.
All right, then I'm going to flip this one around on you. This is a comment from our listener, David Egbert.
I try to eat healthy, and I live paycheck to paycheck, so bringing lunch to my job at a chain drugstore is a necessity. Unlike everyone else that can go home for lunch, I have to use the break room. So why should I have to apologize for microwaving dishes with fish or broccoli when other coworkers just come in long enough to clock in or out? I can't afford to go to McDonald's every day, nor would I want to.
What do you say to David?
If people genuinely aren't bothered by it, then David has nothing to worry about. If no one else uses the break room and the smell doesn't carry, he should microwave to his heart's content. But if other people do go in there and the smell does linger, it's polite to be thoughtful about that. And there are a lot of healthy, affordable lunch options that don't involve heating up fish in particular.
You know, there are a lot of arguments about what qualifies as smelly food, but there is also a particularly cultural one that one of your readers raised, saying that oftentimes people target food that's from other cultures they're not familiar with. How do you handle that, and is there a way to make everyone happy?
There is definitely a thing where people are more likely to complain about the smell of foods that are less familiar to them, which often does mean foods from other culture, while they ignore equally pungent Western foods.
Right.
You don't want to end up implying that American foods are fine while others aren't. I think you can agree on some ground rules, though, to navigate the biggest problems and ask people to be considerate of others. I mean, you've got to understand you're never going to have a perfectly odor-free office as long as you have humans working and eating there. I do think you can expect professional adults to be considerate of others once the issue is pointed out. But yeah, you do want to keep an eye on it to make sure that you're not treating non-Western foods differently.
One listener wrote to us about a personal candy bowl that was co-opted by her colleagues. I want to read you that one. This is Susan Austin, and she said, "Are there any rules about a candy dish on a coworker's desk? At a former job, everyone seemed to think it was a communal dish, but it was on my desk, and I bought the candy with my own money. People would even make suggestions as to what kind of candy I should fill the dish with." How do you deal with this one?
I do think if you keep the candy dish on your desk, people are going to think it's there to share, because that is often the case when a candy dish is sitting out. So I think this person is inadvertently playing into norms around candy dishes that she might not intend to be activating. So I'd say if you don't want people taking candy, store it somewhere else, like just in your desk drawer. But if you are okay with sharing, as long as people don't abuse the privilege, like by taking all of the candy and emptying it out within hours and making demands, if you're okay with it, as long as that stuff isn't happening, then I would say, you know, if someone annoys you by trying to place an order for the kind of candy they want, respond by asking them to pick up a bag of whatever it is they like the next time they're at the store, and hopefully they'll get the hint.
So shared food also brings up shared space, right? People label their lunches. We know not to take things from the office fridge that have labels on them. But who should police things when they go bad? We had kind of an amazing, I'm going to call out my colleagues here, passive-aggressive milk labeling incident in the Marketplace New York Bureau. You know, this milk has gone bad. This milk was purchased on X date. Who deals with that stuff when it happens, when you're sharing a space?
Yeah, it's really the tragedy of the commons. The only time I've seen offices successfully beat this one is when they make it officially part of someone's job. I think if you just rely on everyone to pitch in and take care of their stuff on their own, you end up with a fridge that looks like it's full of science experiments. So a lot of offices will assign, you know, often like a junior member of the admin staff, for instance, to clean the fridge once a week or once a month. A lot of places will say that they'll just toss everything that doesn't have a note on it, say every Friday afternoon, Tupperware containers and all. If you don't implement some kind of system like that, you do get pretty disgusting situations in there.
A couple of listeners wrote to us about potluck moochers, and there was this photo, I don't know if you remember, that made the rounds on social media of potluck macaroni and cheese that was literally just pasta with, like, grated cheese on the top. And our listener, Gary Montgomery, wrote to us about bad cooks bringing in unhealthy recipes at his workplace for potlucks, Miracle Whip pasta, for example. Are there tips for potlucks and communal meals that don't, you know, create a war?
Office potlucks are so interesting because there's such a wide range of how they play out. Some offices are full of really great cooks who bring in gourmet dishes and who compete to outdo each other. And then in other offices, you get a dozen people who all just bring in a bag of tortilla chips. So, and also I think sometimes people get resentful that they've put real time and effort into preparing something. And then a colleague strolls in, plops down a liter of soda on the table and walks out with a plate full of food that represents hours of their coworkers' cooking labor.
Yeah.
I think, though, you know, not everyone cooks, and people have different ideas of what good food is. And that's just the nature of office potlucks. Your best bet is probably to embrace the weirdness, if you can, and to enjoy this glimpse into your coworkers' culinary leanings. And if you're going to be bothered, if you don't find something that you're excited to eat there, bring in some backup food for yourself in case you end up needing it. One tip for managers, though, if you can, it can help for the office itself to provide a catered main course or two while everyone else provides the desserts and the appetizers, so that if you do get a lot of those macaroni and cheese disasters that you mentioned, there's still enough for people to feed themselves with.
Allison Green, who runs Ask a Manager, joins us every so often to talk about work, life at work, and the do's and don'ts of the place where we all spend a lot of time. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you.